Now, all right, the one and only DJ Redmatic, welcome to Dove CNN, man. How are you doing?
Thank you. Man, I'm happy to be alive, but thank you for having me.
No problem, man. Thank you for taking a few minutes out of your evening. Can you explain turntablism to those who may not be familiar with the term?
Okay, turntablism, basically, it is the art of using the turntable as a musical instrument. So basically being also being DJs, it's also being a term called turntablist. Basically, we're DJs as a musicians using the turntable and, you know, scratching and making music out of scratching, just pure scratching and pure vinyl manipulation. And then basically, you know, like people are saying this, well, the turntable is only meant for playing records. Well, henceforth, with the us quote unquote turntables have used this as a musical instrument, made beats out of just making scratches straight from records, no sampling whatsoever, just straight vinyl manipulation.
Okay. Now, I know you're a member of two different groups, kind of, obviously the world-famous Beat Junkies, which is kind of, for lack of a better term, a turntable band, and then the Visionaries, which is a group of, in a more traditional sense, with DJs and MCs. So, is that an accurate description?
Yes, sir.
Okay. Cool. Now, I had a question I wanted to ask you. You know, hip-hop goes through different stages, and I remember when the DJ was very much respected in hip-hop. And then you went through a good time where turntablism, the movement, was kind of like the end thing, and I felt it was getting back to appreciating the DJ. How do you think the DJ is viewed today?
It all depends, I guess, where you're at in the business, per se, or in the scope of things. I think the DJs, no matter what, even if they're in the forefront or not, they're always going to be the backbone of the hip-hop culture, you know, or even in the rap industry and stuff, because they're the ones that, they play the music, they break the music, they're the ones that put out the music, they're the ones that actually make the music. I mean, even the greatest producers were DJs before.
Right.
You know, like Dr. Dre, DJ, mm-hmm. You know, DJ Premier, Pete Rock, Jay Dilla, Madlib, you know, the list goes on. It's just like, if you know your history, that you know that that at one point they were DJs and stuff, and it is a natural progression to become a DJ, to become a producer. And then of course you got like mixtape DJs, you know, today's scheme of things is putting out mixtapes per se and trying to put out the new music. Same thing on the radio, same thing in the clubs. The DJs are the ones that is control the crowd. That's basically it. And if you know your hip-hop history, you know, in terms of the music, for hip-hop music, it's the DJs that pretty much started the whole the musical aspect of hip-hop.
True indeed. Nowadays, when you kind of think of technology helps in many industries, and hip-hop's no different. So DJs used to carry crates and crates of 12-inch records. You know, I have friends that used to do that. Now they can carry a jump drive with thousands of songs on them, or by using, I think, that program called Serato. It seems to have, you know, saved the DJ in terms of time and money when traveling. But what's your opinion on technology and the DJ?
Like in everything, you know, it all, that technology puts its hand on, it's like it's good and bad, you know. Like you said, it's good in terms of it helps, you know, save time, you know, less stress per se, convenience. But at the same time, it's to become, you know, like it's almost to a point where it's just like easy access and make cats more lazy.
Right.
I personally use Serato, you know. But then at the same time, I still buy records, you know, just because I come from that generation. And I've always said that, you know, like, technology should be good, should be used in enhancing what you do, not take over what you do. And I believe that, you know, like, something like Serato's, like, it's if you use Serato, it's like basically for those who've been doing it for a long time, you know, you deserve it. My man Premier said the same thing. If you've been lugging crates for so many years, moving speakers and, you know, just putting in some work and perfecting your skills and crap. tracked and stuff. Serato, you deserve to have Serato. But if cats have not been DJing, I don't think that, they can consider themselves a DJ, using Serato. Because if you're a whack DJ in the beginning, using Serato is not going to help you become a better DJ.
Right.
You know, if you're already a dope DJ, Serato will enhance whatever you can do, to make it a little more easier, and you still can be dope, like Jazzy Jeff is a good example. My man Jazzy Jeff, he's a legendary DJ, and this guy is one of the pinnacles of what a dope DJ should be. And he was the one who introduced, I was the first person, he was the first person that the junkies have saw use Serato, and because we were kind of all skeptical about, oh man, vinyl. But if Jazzy Jeff can fuck it up on the turntables, cutting it up, transforming doubles and all that stuff on Serato, that made me a believer.
Okay.
But if you're like Joe Schmo, just DJ, never touched a turntable and got a laptop and can DJ, it's only been DJing for 3 months and can getting a party, you're not really considered a DJ. You're just a laptop player, really.
Yeah.
It's just, I mean, no disrespect, because you got to start somewhere, but it's just like, I just think there's no appreciation for what a lot of cats put into, and people are just like, and like I said, it kind of like is good and bad. Would you want to hear? No, that's a bad analogy because I said that before, and then I kind of I was gonna say would you rather make love to a machine or would you rather make love to a real woman?
Right.
And I don't know, I don't know if that would fit, if that cliche would is a good analogy and stuff like that, because it's still really, it's not really the machine, it's the person. There you go.
You think people getting into DJing because of that technology, they think it's easy, and so they don't really understand all the really hard work.
Exactly, totally. So it's like, what really comes down to, it's like the same thing too. Like when you make, like I guess there's even called like using the producers thing. Like people were using Fruity Loops, and they're like saying, "Oh shit, if you never used an MPC or SP-1200, you're not really a real producer." But it really comes down to, it's like it's really not the machine; it's the person behind the machine. It's the soul that you give to it. So that's what I was trying to get at.
Got you. Now you mentioned that you still collect records. Now I was reading that you have a very impressive soul and old school R&B collection. How big is your collection?
That's a good question. I don't know. I still collect. I mean, I still buy this, even to fill up voids and spaces that I'd never, either I slept on them a while back, and then it's like, let me, fill that gap, or just you always want to look for something that's I wish I had that record before, like that. So it's just, I lost count, honestly. So I've been luckily, I've been DJing for almost more than 20 years, so.
Yeah.
So I've been lucky to see a lot of things come and go, per se. I'm not old, but,
I got you.
But I think I'm lucky to be an experienced veteran, per se.
Now, I know that you're a talented producer, and you still spin in clubs, right?
Yes, sir.
And you said, I know you cut it up and do all those things. So how do those other talents influence your production style?
Basically, it's like I said earlier, it's like some of the greatest hip-hop producers or producers in general, they used to be DJs or musicians before. So I've never learned how to play music, like any type of instrument until I got more into production, but all because of DJing, because me listening to records, listening to music and how they arrange it on the production, and then also as a DJ, when you rock the clubs, I take that experience of how to take that vibe, how to control, to make that vibe translated from the club into production. That's an art in itself, and it's not an easy art. Some people are just some are prodigies, but in anything that you do, it takes time. You need to Okay. And basically, listening to Pete Rock, Dre, and Primo, you know, Diamond D, shoot, DJ Quick, you know, just listen to all the greats, you know, like, I always try to figure out, how do they do that? And then, you know, of course, there's no, back then, you never had videotapes or DVDs to show you how to make beats. Now, like, compared to now, they got YouTubes and got some breaking down shit like that. We had to figure it out ourselves.
Yeah.
Of course, back then, too, I come from a generation where the term biting, which means copying, is a big no-no. You know, like, if you were to bite someone else's styles, you would consider it to be a sucker, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Almost, always only in terms of, like, you know, in terms of, you know, instant fighting. You know, you're gonna have to fight for that. You know, like, and get a beat down for that, or for the name, or your title, you know, whatever, whatnot. And in today's things, it's cool to emulate what's hot right now. I mean, that's just how it is. I guess it's just a weird thing. But in the way I was raised in terms of this culture, originality gets more respect. I mean, obviously, like, you got someone like the Neptunes at one point. You know, when they first came out, everybody sounded like the Neptunes. When Dre started doing, you know, he did the G-Funk thing, everybody wanted to do the G-Funk thing. Now, when Dilla came out, everybody wanted to do all the neo-soul, quote-unquote, shit, you know?
Yeah.
Just, you know, Primo did the chops, everybody sounded like Primo. You know, like, I mean, for me, as a, you know, when I started off, of course I emulated all my heroes, but I did it within the confines of my bedroom stuff until I figured out how to make my own style.
Indeed.
There's a difference between being influenced and difference of being of copying. So, as the saying goes, imitation is a form of flattery, but there's a thin line.
That's true. Now, I've always wondered how the process works, like, as far as when you're laying scratches down over a record. Like, for example, I know you did the scratching on that Assassination record, you know, of years back. How quickly do the scratches come to mind? Like, okay, I already, when you hear the beat or you hear the verse or the whatever part of the chorus, is it a quick process? Is it quicker the longer you do it?
It all really depends. On Rav's Assassination, Rav asked me, like, when he asked me to scratch, he told me, he actually had a phrase already, like, in, you know, like, or he had something in mind what he wanted me to do.
Right.
You know? So it helps, you know, so that, it was more of a quick process. So he told me, hey, can you bring this record? Can you come down to the studio and scratch this? And I want to scratch you with it. That's an easy process. Other processes is like, the hard process is when you hear something like Premiere, like late scratches with Gangsta, and you hear all these like different samples and hooks and shit like that and patterns.
Yeah, yeah.
That's a long process in itself. You know, like, that's like, it's almost like the same thing as writing, you know, like MC writing, you know, like I would have to take, you know, like one first, I would have to like take time to listen to all my records and listen to each verses to find a phrase that would fit.
Right.
And, you know, okay, I found one phrase, let me put that aside. Let me find another record. And that could either can come quickly, or that can take me a day or two.
Gotcha.
Or even longer. And once I got that and put that together, now I just figure out, like, how do I put that all together, you know, to make sense? And then, you know, that's another process of just like, okay, just messing, you know, like, you know, in my head, and then just, you know, listen to the beat, scratch along with it, and then after that, me being, you know, being a DJ, I, you know, like, I'm trying to represent, like, make sure I come off dope. I gotta make sure I come off, you know, try to come off with dope styles and techniques to represent me, but yet at the same time fit the song, you know?
Yeah.
You know, so like some songs, like, it might be slow. You can't go do a crazy chirp scratch where you go, you know, like some crazy fast turbo scratches, unless it's,
yeah,
it's meant to do that. You know, it's like the same thing when you write to a song, or when an MC writes to a song, you have to find and fit the mood of the song and the vibe of the song. You can't just go all on an all out tangent.
That's true. Now,
so it's basically the same thing as when I make beats, or when I do scratching, I attack it like I was, you know, I'm a musician. I'm part of the instrument. I gotta, like, it has to make sense. So, like, you don't scratch into the verses of the rapper, because that's not part of it, unless it was meant to do it, you know. know?
Yeah.
That's the MC asked me to, like, can you scratch in a phrase or scratch it in here? For the most part, you have to learn, it's like music 101, you know, music theory 101. You just gotta know, like, the basic of, like, okay, your bar structure is how long, like 16 bars, okay, there goes the hook right there, there's the bridge, there's a transition, you gotta know exactly. It's pretty much just, you know, general sense of, the common sense of what you, if you know how to, if you listen to music and you understand music.
Right. Okay. Now I know you've been, like you mentioned a little earlier, you've been in the game for, you know, 20 years plus. Not that finances are everything, but how good is DJing and turntablism and producing and the like been for you? I mean, are you able to still kind of, I guess how they say these days, eat off of the music?
Right. Well, I've been lucky to be doing this, you know, professionally, you know. I mean, of course, you know, like, not like I would like to, you know, others more, like, have made more money than I have, mm-hmm. but in the scope of things, I'd rather have longevity than just be a flash in the pan.
Right.
So, just to be still, like, you know, I guess to be still relevant and able to still work and do what I love to do, what really comes is, at the end of the day, that's all that matters, is that and plus people respect my work. And then, you know, of course, you know, as I get older, of course, I would like to have more financial gain, but, you know, at this particular point, I'm not even tripping because, you know, I got to do what I'm, you know, I get to do what I love to do for a living. Which, you don't have to pay me to do this. I do this for free, you know.
Right.
But this, you know, and so that's, I guess that's what, but it's not easy, though, that when you're in the business, though, you have to also realize it's not, you have to learn how to, I guess, find your niche or adapt to it.
Well, speaking of that niche, do you find that, like, overseas, is a big market for your talents? Do you find that, or is it just about finding the right niche pockets in the States that you cater to as well?
I think it's a little bit of both, you know? I've been, you know, like, I think in this particular point in my career, I think I'm starting, you know, I'm pretty lucky that I can do a little bit of both and stuff.
Okay.
Like, I know, like, overseas is definitely a big market and very, very, they're very more appreciative of our talents than the United States. But I've also been lucky to do a lot of stuff over here that I'm still, you know, like, and work with other cats, like, you know, whether it be on the underground scene or on the quote-unquote commercial mainstream scene. So I've been, you know, and then just lucky, like, also able to meet people, you know, throughout the course of my career and just meeting people that I've either, you know, I've looked up to and was fans of and become able to network and work with them. Or, you know, just have people that I've never thought in my entire, you know, like, they're like the hottest cats will be like, yo, I'm a big fan of yours. Like, huh? Like, you know, and when it really also comes down to it, I'm still, like, I'm still a fan. I'm a hip-hop head no matter what. So, you know, like, I love what I'm doing. I love, you know, I love this culture and stuff. I love this, you know, I love the music and, you know, just to be able to, like, just able to do what I'm doing and meet people is a blessing, you know. Like when I was younger, of course, you know, I think when everybody's young, you want to be the dopest, you know. Of course, you want to be the rawest, you want the hardest, you want to be number one and shit.
Yeah.
That was when I was, you know, but now it's like, man, I just want to be respected. I don't care about being number one because it's more pressure to be number one than it is to be just doing you. You know what I'm saying?
Gotcha. So tell me about, you know, what can people, are there any projects that people should be on the lookout for? Anything with the you and the Beat Junkies or what's going on?
Well, a couple of things. Well, one, the Beat Junkies, we do a once a month club called Nightlife at the Ding Factory in Hollywood. Like every second Saturday, it's like us and then Power Signs from Dilated Peoples host the party. We've been doing that. It's a 21 joint. It's like, so, and we've been doing that spot for almost off and on, like 7 years. And if, you know, like, you know, if people want to see the Junkies get down, you know, not on some turntable shit, but just hear good music and want to dance and just, you know, like, you know, just get your groove on and hear good music and have a good time, you know, without, like, worrying about how you dress and all that stuff, you know. You know, that's where they can see us and, you know, get down and stuff like that. I mean, we'll do a little turntable stuff in there, you know, but I think the process, you know, it's more to hear, like, you know, Gangstar, you know, Dilla, you know, Snoop and reggae, Brazilian music and some funk all in one place, and see girls there dancing to that shit too.
Okay.
And seeing like cats like, you know, like once in a while like Bishop Lamont or Madlib or Sean Price from the boot camp, like hanging out at this spot and hearing good music, you know.
Okay.
And so that we've been doing that for the, you know, that's one spot, you know, that's one thing that, you know, been doing.
And you said that's at the Knitting Factory?
At the Knitting Factory in Hollywood every second Saturday.
Gotcha.
Each month.
Okay.
And then production wise, there's a couple things I'm working on. One is like I'm doing a producer's album. I'm working at it with this talented producer named Jay Rawls from the group Lone Catalyst.
Yeah.
People might not know him, but he produced Brown Skin Lady off of the Buff Star album, Most Def and Tala Kweli. So me and him are doing a producer's album together. We've been working on that for almost like 2 years and stuff. We're just busy. I'm about to work on, I'm doing an EP with this talented rapper from Detroit named Buff One. I'm doing all the production. He's rhyming. If cats want to check him out, you can just Google him, BUFF1. He's, you know, he's down with like he's down work with Gilkey Simpson and Elzai from Slum Village. Mixtapes. I've done mixtapes for Gilkey Simpson called Stray Bullet, and I just finished doing this mixtape for this producer named Christ. I don't know if you know spelled K H R Y S I S, and he's down with Little Brother in the Justice League camp.
Okay.
So I did a mixtape with him with all his beats and stuff, and then I've been doing, you know, and still doing scratches here and there. I did scratches on the Calthroid album with Black Milk and Bishop Lamont, and I'm actually doing some scratches for Strong and Steady right now, and I've done scratches for Tala Kweli and just a couple other people and stuff. So, you know, I'm just trying to stay busy and then trying to get my production game up too also. So,
okay.
And then still trying to practice on the DJ tip, not as much as like I used to, but, you know, I try to.
Well, sounds good, man. So any last words for Dub CNN?
Yeah, man. Thank you for interviewing me. Shout-outs to you, Javon. Shout-out to my man, Day One, who actually originally hooked it up and shit. And, shit, CEA all day.
All right, for sure, for sure.